How much dancing is too much dancing? We'll find out because we watched Dancing, It's On. You know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Did you know you wonder how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am Paul Scheer, a.k.a. Tall John, and today on the show, we have a great movie musical, Dancing, no G, It's On. The story about a young, rich girl who goes to visit her father over the summer, falls in love, and joins a dance competition in the vein of all the step-up films, but even with worse production values, we'll break it all down. But first, let me introduce my co-hosts, Jason Mantzoukas and June Diane Raphael. How are you both?
This was a wild ride. I vacillated between being absolutely fascinated and like this movie almost giving me a panic attack.
Yeah, Jason, I felt the same. I don't know what happened, and I both want to watch this movie again over and over, and I never want to see it again, too. I have so...
It's immediately forgettable.
Well, yeah. But also certain things, lines of dialogue, costume choices, song choices are burnt into my brain.
Well, can I have questions that I suspect, Paul, you have answers to that I specifically didn't look up?
Okay, I have a few.
Was this movie underwritten by the tourism board for Panama City, Florida?
Okay, well,
because most of the movie appears to be a tourism ad for Panama City, Florida.
As I was watching this movie, I'm like, I'm having so many feelings about the costumes, so many feelings about these people. And then one word came to me that I do feel is the only description you need for this movie. And that word is Florida.
Yes. This movie is wall-to-wall Florida.
It's Florida but all day long from beginning to end.
That little yellow car.
If Florida made a movie, that's what they would make.
This is a roadside t-shirt made into a movie.
Yes.
All those stores that you pass as the tour shops.
It's a Florida boardwalk as a movie. It is. I also want to say, 40 to 60% of this movie is just B-roll. Of Florida that they have shot on the streets.
Yes.
I just want to say something about the B-roll and some of the footage in this movie. Because it really can't be described as a movie. It is footage cut together.
Yes.
You know, it's just footage.
It's video camera footage. And there's there's a lot of things to say about the janky nature of the filming. Is this movie completely dubbed post? It seems that way.
The entirety of the movie appears to be ADR.
I'm not even worried about that.
But leave that over there for a second. Because that's not even worth our time, right?
But exactly.
It's
exactly.
Really not. That's for someone else's podcast. But,
sure.
But what and this is one of the reasons why I would like to watch this movie again. Because if you just watch the extras from
I wrote this down.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is literally one of the most fascinating, the cast of characters, because at first you're like, oh, it's like sexy young people on a beach.
No.
Like, it's a beach movie. And then you'll see old guys bopping along and watching some of the dance numbers. It is the extras in this movie are so fascinating.
They all feel as if at any given point when they were shooting this, they're like, do you want to be in a movie?
Well, and everyone was like, that's what I was
going to
say.
Okay, yeah.
I was going to say that I felt like the extras are not, in fact, extras. They are, there's a sign posted that said, if you are in this area, you are being filmed. And that they were either that or they were stealing shots without permits.
Because these people were excited to be there. They are reacting.
Because there's people spiking the camera.
Yes.
There's people that are just watching the dancing as if the dancing has just started happening in front of them or stuff like that. And I was like, I don't think some of these people know they're on camera.
Do you think that the garbage men who wave to our lead character as she's driving in knew that they were in a movie? No, I have a feeling they were driving with a camera in a truck and they were waving at people. People wave back and they're like, it's in.
Oh,
because those are sanitation workers, without a doubt, doing their job in Panama.
Yeah, during the Jen and Ken date montage. They go to like the amusement park. They go to all these locations, and it's like an incredibly long montage. This movie is 90% montages. Incredibly long montage. Every place they go, they're surrounded by people who are certainly unaware they're being filmed. And, you know what I mean? And that is just evident, you know, throughout. Which means the majority of the movie features uncredited Florida natives.
That is what I'm telling you. That is why I couldn't take my eyes off of them.
To me, it felt like, and look, there's a moment in this movie where they cut to three establishing shots of Ripley's Believe It or Not. And they're not even in the movie. Like, it's not even a location that they go to.
Not only that, they hit multiple tourist attractions. The amusement park gets a full master shot. Like that's what I mean by, was this underwritten by the tourism board for Panama City, Florida? Because it acts as a commercial for the city itself. They're having fun in all of the tourist locations of Panama City.
And yet, if that's what it was, boy, they didn't do a great job, because every shot of that hotel, every shot of that city, I thought, that looks so fucking disgusting.
I literally wrote back, I've never wanted to not visit a city more. This is an anti-tourism ad. This is like, it's
the
not, there's nothing, ex- it's like, don't go to Panama City. No. And if you do, this is like
and yet I was also like, this is the best Florida has to offer.
It did feel like Panama City was like, we can make a step up movie. And then this is what they came up with.
Let's even go back to the beginning, because it doesn't start in Panama City. It starts in Beverly Hills, where our
she's
lead actress.
She's in Beverly Hills?
At the very beginning.
Yes, as a dancer. And she's a high school cheerleader. And she goes to her house. First of all, she's picked up in a Rolls Royce.
Oh, my God.
that to me screams about the financing of this film. Whoever made this film was like, oh, you know who has a Rolls Royce? Chuck, he's financing the movie. He'll let us borrow his Rolls Royce. It's such an old school car.
Later, in the movie, when she's on a date with Danny, the head bellboy, she gets dropped off in like a limo, like a Hummer limo or something like that. But like the rental agency for the limo's advertisement is just on display on the window. I was like,
this movie said wild. Everybody who is in this movie is getting something out of it. Even the gym in which the father's boxing in, behind him is a giant logo of the gym.
Everything gets like hero shots. Every place, everything.
I don't mean to be a snob about this, but I do want to say that she's picked up in a Rolls Royce, and we see the exterior of this house, which is a beautiful house, but it seemed to me not a house in which you would have two butlers and a driver. Like she has two butlers, and the two butlers just lift. Like, there's a butler for the mom and a butler for the daughter, because the mom is divorced. The daughter is, a little bit late for dinner. The mom's waiting patiently at the table as the butlers are waiting to.
The mom is sitting in a chair that is like a giant wooden throne that would exist in like an English castle. She's sitting in a chair that is in, I'm going to say, a dining room that is 12 by 24. The chair dominates the room to a degree that is shocking. forced perspective.
It's like, also one of those houses that, like, it feels like it's trying to be fancy. Like, we'll have a lot of reds and a lot of wood. It's like there's nothing expensive about it, but everything looks expensive. It feels like it's so trying to be.
That's how I felt about the hotel when she was like,
oh my God,
you know, this is supposed to be a big fancy hotel. Okay, but to back up, so many questions. You know, in that scene with the mother, she announces that she's going to send her daughter to spend the summer with her dad. And then sort of prepares her, like, you're not going to believe what goes on at this hotel, or it's really something to see, or says something like that. Then we get to the hotel. We're going to have to spend about like 5 hours just on the hotel.
Opening sequence.
Here's what I'll say. Like, I would rather this movie, the entirety of this movie, have been about the captain and the characters yes. in the lobby.
I
the
love captain, that's Russell
the
Ferguson.
The stilt girl, the mime.
The stilt girl.
The stilt girl, the mime.
Oh, they, the mime.
She gets, to be clear, Jen flies from Beverly Hills. She flies from Beverly Hills to Panama City, Florida, where she is picked up in a golf cart by a mime.
And then they drive. I mean, look, I can't imagine
like
that golf cart is allowed
Marcel
on the road.
Like a Marceau mime.
Oh, that mime is miming the entire, like, that mime is the tour guide, doing like a mime tour guide of Panama City yeah. as they're in a golf cart leaving the airport, which I imagine the reason why it's nighttime when they arrive at the hotel is because that golf cart can't travel on any real roads. I mean, at certain points, the golf cart is just driving through parking lots of, like, a mini golf location. It's like, there's not, it's oh. not even trying to be
well,
a road.
Totally. And I couldn't figure that out. I was like, you've gone to great lengths to show us she gets picked up from school in a Rolls Royce. She's wealthy, right. et cetera, et cetera. So why does she get picked up in a golf cart in Panama City? Why wouldn't she get picked up? It doesn't matter because it's just funny and weird.
Well, it is a good question, though, because I was thinking, well, first of all, never got the answer to just why hasn't she seen her father in 5 years?
Okay. Right. If he thinks it's 3 years and she corrects him and says 5 years and then they seem fine with it.
Jennifer?
Father?
Look at you. You're so tall now. And you're so pretty. Wow. I can't believe it's been 3 years since I've seen you.
Actually, it's been five. 5 years, 3 months, and 14 days to be exact, Father. I've counted every moment.
But later in the movie, when the father is trying to intimidate the boy who likes her, he's like, she means the world to me. It's like, no, she doesn't, dude.
You are a stranger to her, guy. Meanwhile, her dad is like an MMA fighter.
Yeah, her dad said that he was like
a hotelier, I thought. Turns out he's like a championship MMA fighter. I couldn't figure that out at all.
He owns a hotel. He spends his life really in meetings, but he wasted a lot of his life in fights. And I would also argue he seems a little bit too old to be an MMA fighter, but he looks like he's still...
He was ripped, though. He was ripped.
He was absolutely ripped, but he didn't look like he wanted to throw him in the ring with like a young buck. Like, I just feel like, you know, look, he's a fighter. Looked great. But I don't think he's like still fighting. Is he still fighting? Is he still in the fight game?
Maybe.
I mean, he's working out like he is.
Yes. He had Jean-Claude Van Damme vibes to me. He had some sort of like.
He's British, right?
He's British.
Australian,
okay.
I thought.
Oh, Australian. Australian. Sorry,
yeah,
Australian.
I was like, okay, he's giving me vibes that he's like, maybe he's a fighter that. I was like, oh, should I know who this is? Like, is he like an actual fighter guy?
Right. But no, he is not.
But that part felt authentic where I was like, yes. Oh, if you own a hotel in Panama, what is it called? Where?
Panama City.
Panama City.
Panama City. Like, you probably are also an MMA fighter. Like, that
yes.
piece of it.
Okay.
I actually
Florida is a
into.
Place where you kind of hide money, right? That's why a lot of celebrities and sports stars live in Florida. They can there's a tax shelter there. So
they use it as a tax shelter. Yeah. I think I was just more kind of fascinated by why he did want her to. Okay, couple questions. Why he wanted her to come that summer mm-hmm. and where he's been and what he's been doing. And then also, like, why did he have such a problem with her dating the dishwasher, but not a problem with her dating a bellman.
The bellman. Okay, that's bellman. All right, so he
because they both are dancers, so it's
both,
not like
yes.
I'm going to got to keep her away from sexy dancing. Like, well, they're both going to dance.
I think it's a matter of like the bellboy is on the track to become like the junior manager or the whatever, and the dishwasher is like. Just doesn't he call him like no daughter of mine is going to date a lowly dishwasher.
But he's not just
like
a dishwasher. What we see from that opening montage of him, he is working in the kitchen. He's
delivering
washing
towels.
Dishes. He's delivering towels. He's taking out the trash. The man is doing multiple, he's making beds.
This movie has very heavy, I know we've mentioned the Step Up movies, but this movie also has very heavy Dirty Dancing vibes. You know,
yes,
this,
without
it has,
any
don't
stakes.
Even compare it, Jason.
But it does. But it does.
Dirty
this is definitely
this.
A nobody
no,
puts baby
not.
In the corner.
It is. No, I can't. But you know what it is?
Like, it's set at a hotel with a rich girl dating the poor guy who works at the hotel with a disapproving dad. You know, like, it is, there is, it's
get
not.
Get Patrick Swayze's name out of your mouth.
I didn't say it. You did.
But just get it out of your mouth before you even put it out there.
Our young Patrick Swayze in this movie.
Listen, this is my dance space. This is your dance space. Spaghetti arms.
How dare you?
I carried a watermelon. By the way, these are all quotes from Dirty Dancing.
How dare you?
When they set up our two characters, him as the dishwasher, maid, sanitation worker, he does everything at the hotel, and it's a very large hotel, so that seems like his job is huge. When they set up that opening moment where they're both like kind of dancing in their own rooms, and then the screen is divided in half, I thought I knew we were in for a good film because they didn't quite sync.
Right.
Like, they both are supposed to turn to me. Like, it's the line is like they're both in their rooms, but they are synced together, dancing together. And she is about.
It never quite worked.
She's about like 3 or 4 seconds behind him. Like, he turns first, then she turns, and then he turns out, and then she turns. Like, it. And it just made me go, like, huh? Like, we couldn't have fudged this at all. Like, there wasn't.
For me, it was when, like, the footage, like, of them, like, the dancing and stuff, part of it seemed, like, good and big, trying to take in the whole thing. And then a lot of it seemed like they were just running around with a GoPro on people or iPhones on people. Like, really weird, like jangly close-ups, you know, like, really, jittery kind of camera work. And this is weird.
It's weird because this movie came out in 2015.
Yeah.
And it feels like it was shot on literally a VCR camcorder. Like, it has that quality.
Totally.
Wait, it came out in 2015?
Yes. Yeah, I thought this was going to be like a Voyage of the Rock Aliens
kind of, but it's recent.
Wait.
Yes.
What?
2015.
Yes.
And that's what makes it even more like, and I don't want to like, we can go in a deeper conversation, a different podcast about quality, but just visually, it seems like even if it was shot on an iPhone in 2015, the quality would be so much better.
Well, okay. I thought this was filmed and released in like 1994.
No, this came out the same year The Martian came out.
I'm stumped.
The Martian, Goosebumps, and Bridge of Spies.
I'm so confused.
Dancing. It's on.
Yeah. No, I agree with you, June. Because when I went into this, I thought it was akin to Voyage of the Rock Aliens.
Yeah.
Like a dance movie from the 90s that I'd never heard of or something like that. And then when it started, I was like, oh, no, this is new. When was this? And I looked it up and I was flabbergasted.
I'm shocked. And the other. So just to go back to the story for a second.
Yeah.
I see this hotel as having. Like, they have a budget for their performers. I'm sure Captain, the mime, the woman on stilts, like, they are employees of the hotel. So, and Shotzi seems to be an employee of the hotel who's in, like, the entertainment.
Yes, Shotzi was performing in the driveway.
Yes,
Shotzi was doing one of the driveway dancers.
She's referred to by Danny the Bellboy as one of our dancers.
Now, why wouldn't... Our dishwasher, I can't remember that character's name, Joe.
Ken.
Why wasn't
Jen
Ken?
Jen and Ken.
Yeah.
Why wasn't Ken a dancer?
Well, that's a great question because he's easily the best dancer in the movie. And they know that and they give him so much to do, which is wonderful. They give him all these dance numbers by himself, basically.
And he's great.
Just to kind of showcase his talent, but he doesn't seem to be one of the in-house dancers, even though he does dance on site.
Well, and when she first enters the lobby, she sees him dancing in the lobby with the other performers. By the way, when she first enters the lobby, there are contortionists, there are people on stilts, and there are people just simply acting out Gone with the Wind, to which she goes over to the people acting out Gone with the Wind. They're just acting it out, and she goes, oh, Gone with the Wind, my favorite movie. Now, this movie came out in 2015. I don't think a young high school girl's favorite movie is Gone with the Wind. Also, problematic movie for her to have as her favorite, our favorite movie. But like,
that's what's so weird about it is like it, like when you walk into the Hit Parade Hotel owned by her Australian MMA champion father,
who seems has no interest in the
lobby the
arts.
Is wall to wall. What I can only say and describe honestly as circus acts.
Yes.
The
yes.
entire lobby is full of people on stilts. Like you said, contortionists, the mime. It's all circus acts.
Even the man letting you in, like we talked about him a few times, the captain, who is the doorman, he, whenever he says, like, welcome, he's also like, and I don't know if this is the right term, but popping and locking. Like, he's always going
to
be like...
ask Jason about that.
Well, he's definitely dancing. That's why also I wanted the movie to be about the captain, because he is effortlessly charming and the best dancer. I could tell immediately he's the best dancer in this movie, but they're not letting him loose until the end when he gets his number, which was great.
By the way, all the end dances were great, and there are certain points throughout the film where I was like, is this good dancing? I don't know. Because the dance, like, I love Step Up. I love those movies.
Same.
They're great. But here, I was like, is this dance, like, a lot of the solo dances just seem to be a lot of, like, jump, like, a lot of leaping. They seem more balletic.
Well, that
was
one of my favorite parts. I really urge everyone, if they can just do one thing, if they don't want to see the whole movie, just fast forward to the competition at the end.
Oh, wait, I have another moment.
Because I agree, the captain is the best dancer. I believe the best dancer out of all of them.
Absolutely.
And, does do a great number, is in charge of the competition. So he's not
the
only
MC.
In the competition, but because I think he's competing, but he's also
the MC. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Do you think, or maybe Paul, you know, and maybe you have this in your notes, that dance competition is a real competition because the audience that they're filming is not the audience. The movie didn't get that audience. So they're shooting an audience for some other event. And I was like, oh, is there really a dance competition in Panama City that they are piggybacking off of? And this is its audience? Because if you notice, they never show a shot that includes both our dancers and the audience.
And we know that because they simply don't have the footage to match the audience reaction to our heroes dance, which is, turns out, is actually this lyrical number, this very like kind of romantic, lyrical, sexy number. And they keep on cutting to shots of the audience in which they're like, hip hop parade. Like they are moving
they're
and grooving.
They're watching something.
Well,
that's
I mean, I
clearly
well,
watching
I,
someone else.
I mean,
I was laughing so hard.
I want to go back to what you're saying, because this is even more apparent in a few scenes before this, because, well, earlier on, when the father goes out to have a meeting, seemingly late at night, the day that his daughter comes to town.
With his shareholders.
With his shareholders.
This is after he says to her, how's your kitty?
What?
Which I did not like at all.
Wait, what?
The father and the daughter
was uncomfortable with that.
I was like, what is this?
Come on in, I want to show you around. How's your kitty?
She's doing good.
Good.
What?
He said, so, how's your kitty?
Well, I mean, you're probably forgetting a moment because that first scene, which
I'm assuming she had a cat.
Before she could walk in, before she could even walk into the house, like they have such an intense conversation before they even sit down in that room. Like they hash it all out. So there's a lot going on there. But and also what I love about it is there's a lot of original songs. I want to get into the original songs in a second, but she is wandering around, finding her way around Panama City, and there's a sign that says Teen Bash. Teen Bash. So she follows the sign for Teen Bash, which is, the sign is like on the side of a highway, and she's like in the grass. Like if you're, the only way that you would see that Teen Bash sign is if you were driving down the interstate and you're like, oh, Teen Bash. So like it's very much like that. So she goes to Teen Bash, which is in a bar where she needs to get carded. And I go, well, is this a Teen Bash? Certainly not, because everyone in there is a goddamn adult. And then they start dancing, but everyone else dancing around them are older people dancing like they're at a wedding. I was like, this is no better than
a family
wedding. And it's like, in that same idea, it's like, what have they done here with these extras? It's like,
it's not like it's like a teen club, which is what it's set up to be.
Where are the young people like dance? Like, it's, to me, it's like, oh, she uncovers this like cool underground thing where all the teens are dancing. But no, it's like what you were saying, June, like where people are like, hey, ho, like they're just people like dancing. Like I could outdance most of the people.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah, around that.
Whoa.
Yes.
Bring it on.
Yes. It's wedding dancing around this thing. And then they're dancing and then everyone just kind of makes a circle around them.
Well, this is what you're talking about is the meet cute for Ken and Jen. You know, like
their
meet cute. It's when they dance together.
Yeah. Yes.
Which is this really momentous event. And that's what that precipitates them. She says, so why do you dance? And he says, it's my life.
What do you know about dancing? You don't know anything about dancing.
What do I know about dancing?
Yeah, that's right. What do you know, huh? Dancing is my life. You don't know a single thing about dancing.
Oh, no?
Whoa.
And then later on, someone asks him, what are you good at? And he goes, dancing. And he goes, is that what you wanted the answer to be? And he goes, I don't know. Like, there's no, his calling is dance, but it seems like he's having a crisis of conscience. It seems like he's having a real moment about is dance what he should follow, but he has no other things pulling him. It's not like his... Like, no one's pulling him away from dancing, so it's weird that he is.
Well, what's interesting is the movie seems to be setting up a thing where, like, the father is going to get in the way of them being, like, together.
Right.
You know? They even set it up, like, she's, like, he's, like, at work. She comes in and is like, hey, why don't you show me around Panama City? And he's like, oh, I gotta work. I'll get fired. And she's like, don't worry. I'll make sure you don't get fired. And then they go on, like, a long montage where they go, what you were describing earlier, Paul, the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum,
they eat ice cream twice in that montage.
Yep.
They go through a whole thing.
Yeah.
They go to two different ice cream stores, and then they also go and visit a diner in which there's an Elvis and Marilyn Monroe statue, but it clearly is in such a touristy area that they have to block off the Elvis and Marilyn Monroe statue, so it's like gated out, so they can't even get close to them. So they just have to like
it's crazy.
Act like them.
And it's like what would then happen, like normally would be like the guy would get fired.
Yeah.
And Ken would get fired because he played hooky or whatever. And there would be a rift or whatever. But this movie is like, no, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. There are no consequences. They are just into each other instantly. Like they like each other so much. Like after one day of hanging out, which is, I love a whirlwind romance, especially one predicated on dance. But it really didn't do us any favors in terms of the conflict of the movie, you know?
No, well, there's no conflict. I mean, the only conflict, the biggest conflict is right before he plays hooky, which is when he goes into that bedroom of what I would argue is one of the shittiest looking hotel rooms I've ever seen, to see this older man staring staring at this photograph of a young soldier in front of a Tomahawk helicopter. The room is disgusting. There's Chinese food containers on the ground, overturned like 7-Eleven cups, and he's sitting in this chair and he's like, make my bed. And he's like, but your bed's already made. He's like, make it again. I need you here at 9 a.m. to make my bed. And it seemed like this is an interesting role that we don't know exactly what's going on here for a long time.
We find out, it's pretty wild.
Yeah. When we first meet him, it's in the opening montage of them both dancing throughout their lives.
He
calls him Pops and he looks at him like with such disgust. And also, I guess it's a pretty rough thing to just like call someone Pops. Like it feels like he wants him to be Pops. And the other guy doesn't, like we don't know.
Well, it felt to me like, I was confused because it felt like Ken, who calls him Pops, knows who this is And it felt to me like they had a relationship.
It felt like he was his dad.
Or like the guy that is called Pops at the hotel, you know? And the way that Pops reacts with such a scowl and such negativity, I was like, oh, I don't know what's going on. And then as we do follow Pops' journey, it's a harrowing journey, but one that is ultimately a story of redemption and something wonderful happening in the latter half of the movie for him.
Is Pops sleeping on a fold-out couch?
But what I was just going to say is his room is so depressing I was like, I thought this was a luxury hotel. And at times it appears to be a motel.
It's a
and
motel at times, six.
At times it appears to be like a proper hotel.
Like the father lives in a two-story, like a multiple bedroom.
Like a penthouse kind of thing. And Pops lives in like what looks to me like exactly a Motel 6 or something.
It looks like the place that you rent when you go to Panama City with eight friends and you only are paying one. Like it's going to be just me in the room, but then you split it with eight friends. Like it's like, and that's the vibe of the room. And again, it looks like that's a fold out couch. It's not a bed. It's not even fully out.
It's also confusing because like, you know, was the room ever serviced? Like, it looks like nobody's ever been in that room and that's one of the great things about hotel living is it really can't get that messy unless you as a guest are like, I don't want anyone coming in here, which doesn't seem to be his problem. So then it's like, whoa, within 24 hours, you're destroying this room every day? It's so confusing.
It looks like a hoarder's house.
It's so confusing. Yes. And he says he's living in the hotel, which,
you know how long I've lived here?
Fine, but here's the other crazy thing is that he spent the bulk of the movie with a bleeding ear. Did anyone else see that?
What?
There's so many shots of him
where
he has like an open wound in his ear that's bleeding. But I was like, I'm sure they're going to explain at some point why he's like dancing around, prancing around with a bloody ear.
I have an idea of why no one caught it. Do you know why?
Why?
Because he wasn't behind the monitor, the director. He was in front of the camera because that is the director.
I knew it.
What?
I didn't know it, but I knew it.
That character is the director of this movie?
Yes, that is David Winters.
Mind blown.
So David Winters may not have been able to like say to makeup and hair, like, hey, fix the blood coming out of my ear because he's not seeing the blood coming out of his ear.
Wow, that's a wild reveal. I want to say, this is just for us. Paul has the Jen's picture behind him, but every few minutes you line up perfectly.
I know, it's wild.
So it looks like her hair your hair. But it's like a game where you're off most of the time, and then sometimes you just lock right in, and it looks like you have flowing tresses of blonde hair.
Here's the thing I'll say about Jen. Did we hear her voice? I don't know because it was all dubbed. But I did. I thought I might like her if I actually could hear the voice attached to the actual person. I thought she had a fun, sweet energy.
I liked Ken as well. I thought Ken was good too.
Whitney Carson. She's Jen. She is the grand prize winner of Dancing with the Stars. So that's where she's coming from.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know how to pronounce this name, so I'm going to try my best. Ken, his name is Shayshon Wispy Shop. He is the grand prize winner of So You Think You Can Dance. This is like a real merging of two.
So they are like
champions,
reality dance stars.
Yes.
Right.
And,
makes sense.
Yeah. So they came together and I think that
this is like a when Justin met Kelly. Justin to Kelly.
Yes. But I think better because in a weird way, like they're better dancers. I like their chemistry together. I don't mind a lot of what's going on in this movie. Like if you gave them the step up budget, I think we wouldn't have this many issues. Like, even Doug,
well, I mean,
I'm connected.
40% of the movie is just shots of Panama City. You know, they're doing the best with what they've got, truthfully, you know? But, like, when most of the movie has to be shots of the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum and the giant whale that's in front of the amusement park, like, oh, that's, you got...
By the way, I think that whale is just in front of a t-shirt shop. I don't even
I thought it was the entrance to the amusement park. Oh, my God.
No, I just think that that is just a t-shirt shop. That is
it,
like, one of those fun,
a
lot of play. They go there the day, they go there at night. And this also starts to be this weird blending of time. This movie, time is in a standstill because when Jen comes home from her first, like, night out, she bumps into our doorman, the captain. And then the first thing in the morning when Ken arrives at work at before 9 a.m., because we know he's getting yelled at for not being there exactly at 9, the doorman's still on duty. Like, the doorman is working and it's really hard shifts. Like, the doorman never seems to be off at all. There are moments where they go out for a day and I'm like, is this day over? No. And it's the days, yeah. The Panama City days,
it's
go
Florida
long.
Time, baby. Florida
it
time.
It never ends.
Oh, my Lord.
Talk to Jimmy Buffett about it.
Well, that's what was so interesting about, like, I wish, you know, again, don't ever say the name Dirty Dancing on this podcast, on this episode again, but don't ever do it. I'm really upset. But
I had the dance of my life.
Because here's what was so wrong about this. Tonight. Like, Jen, again, I liked her. I have a fondness for her. And she did this cute, sweet little face. And I liked watching her dance. But there, to set her up as, like, a rich girl from Beverly Hills who's, like, you know, super fancy and has got all this, you know, whose dad expects these things from her and comes from this crazy, obscene amount of wealth, like, you couldn't have cast or dressed someone to look more Florida.
Yeah, she fits into she's the Panama City.
She fits in just fine. So this is not a fish out of water. This is a fish in its...
This is a fish in an aquarium.
This is a homecoming.
It is
this
so comfortable.
This feels like a homecoming for her, not a fish out of water.
Well, I will say that there's even a moment when she reveals her richness, which we don't see. Like, she doesn't carry any... Like, look, this is a girl who will fall asleep on a public bench in the middle of the night. Like, that's how, like, which she does do.
That.
And I don't know if,
like,
that's a dream sequence.
And not a comfortable public bench.
like a stone, like a steel.
Yeah, a metal. And she doesn't lie down. She just kind of puts her head on her shoulder and falls right to sleep.
So this is a girl who, we know that she's rich because of the two butlers and the driver, but we don't really get the sense that she's rich or lives in rich until she rips when they have this, like, falling out. And the falling out, the why they have the falling out, we can get into it, but it doesn't make a difference.
Ken and Jen have a falling out because her dad pressures her to go on a date with Danny, the head bellboy, who she doesn't want to go on the date with, but she agrees to just to please her father. She tells Ken that, and Ken angry dances for 10 minutes.
There's so much here. But when Ken had already gotten her, like, a little necklace from that whale store, and she goes, I'll get a real version of this from someone who can afford it, and she throws it on the ground. I'm like, oh, so she does have that, like, rich, like, dick energy. Like, we don't see it until one moment, but it comes out real hard and real quick when she rips off that necklace and tosses it on the ground.
Yeah,
like,
you would think it would be a movie where she's kind of stuck up and kind of looks down on
somebody
like
Ken. Save the Last Dance style. Like, that's what I'm looking for.
And then falls for him or something like that. I'm not sure, you know? But she seems to arrive and be completely at ease at the Hit Parade Hotel with everybody there.
She loves it. She
even
loves...
like, even the problematic relationship she has with her father is instantly remedied, and they are now just, like, the movie doesn't need to, like, litigate that any more than their first interaction. Return to that conversation.
It
that
seems like
he has not seen her in 5 years.
I mean, what about the idea that the dad buys her a special dress?
And, like, he opens it. He buys her.
So
it's a wrapped box.
Pink.
And he says, I got you something for your date with Danny. That's the head bellboy.
Gross.
He opens the box and he holds up the
Disgusting.
Dress against his own body.
I hated it.
and says, I think it would look beautiful, you know,
because
on you.
Here's what I thought was happening in that moment. It was like a scene where someone like pulls out like a sexy, like some like yes. sexy lingerie.
That's why I'm saying this dynamic was weird.
It was so fucking weird. Why would you ever open up a gift to when you're giving it to the person who's about to receive it in front of them? And it's not like, oh, I bought you this thing. It's in a bag. I got it from Bloomingdale's. Here it is. It yeah. was like, no, I'm going to open wrapped. Up. Yeah.
Who wraps a present for someone else and then makes them watch you open
That's
it?
The whole fun. Also, it's like both as someone who's receiving it to open it. And then also as the person who's giving it, it's fun to watch someone open it.
Yes,
June.
Like the whole joy of gift giving.
June, I know we only have you for a few more minutes, but I wanna get into one of my favorite moments because I think this needs to be deconstructed. Is, you know, Jason, you talked about when Ken got upset and he does like angry dancing throughout the city.
Yes,
he dances then, off his toxic masculinity.
Yes,
and there isn't a bench or a waste bin that survives his thrashing.
And he throws one into the pool, and then Pops comes out. And is when we start to understand Pops, because Pops comes out and says, "You blew it. You blew it." And he goes, "What do you mean?" He goes, "When you threw that into the pool, you blew it." And he goes, "What do you mean?" And he goes, "I was a dancer." And he's like, "You got to dance like this." And then this man dances. Solo dances I don't even understand what I'm watching here when he solo
this
dances.
This is Pops. This is the older man who's we've now understand is the director of the movie.
And what do you make of that dance sequence there?
Well, he does a little dance to kind of show Ken, like, I know what I'm talking about. And then Ken looks him up online and realizes, oh, he used to be some big time dancer choreographer, but it seems to have lost his way because his son was killed in a helicopter explosion, which he keeps having flashbacks of, which
yes.
I'm like, were you there? When you can't have a flashback for an event you were not present yeah. for. So that confused me. unless they were in the same, and they were in the same war at the same time, father and son. I don't know.
What bummed me out about that is I felt like he couldn't. I felt like they had to bring the military in somehow to make these straight men dancing and loving dance be okay. And that to me was a bummer. It's like, we can just, even if he's lost his son, but like he doesn't have to have a military flashback
June,
to understand the weight of this character and what he means.
This is called a four quadrant movie. It's for everyone, all right?
So
they
stupid.
Are checking boxes. And here's what I'll say about this. Not only is he mourning his son, he is carrying, and not only is he mourning his son and having PTSD for his son, but he carries the photo of his son with him wherever he goes. Like we catch him on a yacht that's not even really his. It seems like it's maybe the hotel's property or Mr. August's property. We don't know the father. But he's carrying this photo around wherever he goes and just staring at it. And it seems like his days are spent staring at this photo, one photo. I want to tell you a couple things here, though, before you go, June, because
sure.
I think it's interesting. You asked about him bleeding out of the ear. Molly's found this research. During production, David was confronted by something far more threatening than winter weather. The movie was shot in the middle of winter, so that's why you'll notice some people that are dancing are in fur coats. He began having trouble breathing, and we went to the hospital. They told him he had congestive heart failure. The cardiologist said that David needed heart surgery, but David's only thought was his film. He checked himself out of the hospital and completed the shoot. Soon, the filming was done, and that all was, he was able to edit it and get it all done. Now, one other fact I want to tell you while we have June here.
Oh, my God.
David Winters, wrote this film as well. And he was in the original Broadway production of West Side Story as Baby John. He appeared in the 1961 West Side Story movie as Arab. He also became a big star here. He did the choreography for Viva Las Vegas and several other Elvis films.
Wow.
He worked with the Monkees, Barbara Streisand,
makes sense for having
and
the
Anne
Elvis
Margaret.
Statue. Wow. Okay.
He produced 82 things and directed 24 things. This is like, this is David Winters.
He's like a real player.
He is a real player. And you could check out everything you want to know about David Winters on his website, davidwintersbook.com.
Wow.
Yes. So David Winters.
I mean,
is,
that's a heartbreaking story about him.
Well, he didn't die. I mean,
heart failure.
But he didn't die. He finished the movie. Like, there was, you know, like, so yes, he was able to.
A real The Show Must Go On moment.
I mean, truly the show that he checked himself out of the hospital.
He's like, listen, there's a woman in stilts walking around a hotel lobby waiting for me to shoot her.
You know, oh my gosh.
Oh,
it is. He did pass away years after the film was completed in 2019 in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Like not. Okay. So he is not no longer alive.
Ashes to
no
ashes. Longer.
That makes sense then. So much more sense as to why so much of this movie is like you said this in your intro, Paul, like this movie is wall to wall dancing. Like there is so little dialogue. There is so little story. There's so little plot. There's so little character development. There is just dancing. And when there is any kind of emotion, it is not acted. It is danced. You know, so like when Ken feels angry, he dances it out. Everybody dances their emotions in a way that's kind of that now that I understand the writer director is a dancer choreographer, that makes now much more sense to me.
Yeah.
But to watch it was very wild. Bizarre experience.
Well, last thing I'll say, and I'll leave you two to discuss, is in the one of the earlier montages, because I don't think we've touched on it. I was so fascinated and curious about those that water sport.
Oh, where they're being shot up by like water rockets? Yes.
With water boots?
Never seen that before.
It's like Demolition Man style boots.
I have never seen that before.
That's like a thing that exists now. It's like you can do it at like a resort. It's like it shoots water below you and it like rises you up in the air. But it was so clear to me. I was like, when that happened, I was like, oh, this is a great dance number for them. But it's clear they only had one set of water boots because it shows them each doing it. But they don't do it because I was like, oh, cool. Do it. Choreograph a dance routine using these water boots.
Oh,
that's
that
cool.
Amazing.
But no, the movie doesn't do that.
By the way, I'm sure that the organization that they used to get those water boots was like, we only got, we can't take out both boats today with that. Well, June, thank you for that. And Jason, I want to talk
Dance on.
Dance on, June.
I want to talk a little bit about the lyrics of these songs that are
so specific to the movie.
So specific. So there's when Shotzi, that's Ken's like dance partner and him, when she lets him go, right? He starts running through the city. And I stopped it because I was so... you and I both watch these things with subtitles on. So the subtitles really showed the dialogue. So this is the lyric of the song. I would run 500 miles to prove I love you. Very simple song. And then
I would walk 500 miles and... yeah, go ahead.
And it goes, and the next line is, I would even try being a lesbian.
What?
Yes. And then
I did not notice that.
Yes. And it keeps on going. I'm reading it. I'm watching it and reading it as we go. We can actually maybe put in here. I'd sleep with a snake in my bed just to prove that I love you. And then the next lyric is, I would hold hands with the man. I'd swim with sharks and show you I care. There's no place I'd rather be than right here with you. Like, and then after that is, I would swim with sharks to show you that I can.
Wow.
This movie, like those lyrics seem, that lyric of holding hands with a man seems slightly homophobic. But I would also argue that this movie, in many respects, doesn't have any judgment like that, because there's a great moment where they finally kiss and they show their love, and a gay couple looks over and they go, oh, they're just like us. And so I feel like there was no comment on like that was wrong or weird, but it like the lyrics of that song are truly baffling.
And the first where I noticed it first was in when she lands in Panama City and the mime picks her up in the golf cart.
Yes.
And they do a montage where they drive through Panama City. Like the song is Panama City, you're in Panama City,
everyone
the home of
dance.
The beaches, everyone dancing. It's like literally the song lyrics are go along with the movie I'm watching.
Oh,
and I was like, what is happening right now?
The same thing happens when the father goes out to meet with the investors, and the song lyric is something like, I don't want to be alone in my hotel room. Yeah. Like, it's like, all right.
They're so specific. It's really funny. The songs are wild and like feel like they are like from another era. Because it's, again, it's like this movie's from 2018 or 15?
15. Shot in 2013, released in 2015. Okay,
so the movie's like, you know, whatever, 8-9 years ago.
Yeah.
But the songs feel as though they're from the 80s or 90s. They don't feel like contemporary hits.
No.
Or contemporary type songs. And the specificity, especially, again, the one about Panama City, I was like, if you told me that this was... like a 30-minute infomercial about Panama City that like tuned in late at night, I would 100% believe it. Like, if that just seems like this is from the tourism board of Panama City, Florida, because it's like, we got roller coasters and malt shops. We got the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum.
Hey, check Panama. Out this mine behind me. Isn't
check
it crazy?
Check into the Hits Hotel. What's it called?
I didn't even write it down. But yeah, and by the way, you never see an exterior of the Hits Hotel. You only see it from like the covered parking lot where, look, I mean,
the Hit Parade Hotel. Hit Parade Hotel.
I want to talk about the mime a little bit more, too, because we think the mime is just like a beginning, like a fun way to introduce, you know, the tour guide of Panama City is a mime. But he comes back at the end when she is so upset and he seems to be stalking her.
Yes.
Like hiding in bushes, narrating.
And he's like a creepy old mime. Mimes are, you know, I don't trust people that don't talk like that. You know, like, I don't like it. Mimes are sketchy.
Again, and to maybe make it a four-quadrant film, we really wanted to get the army people and the mimes in. But there's something about this movie that reeks of this guy, David Winters, RIP, just truly calling in all of his old friends. Like, oh,
yeah.
I know Ted. He's a great mime. Oh, and Sally's got that Rolls Royce. We'll get it all. Like, you know, it's like everybody.
Oh, and everybody from the circus can come in because they have shows at night. So we'll shoot them during the day and they can just be in the lobby. You know, when I tell you the poor woman who is on stilts shooting this movie all day, every day on those stilts must have been miserable. Oh, like this is chaos.
Well, I would argue that I don't think they shot any scene for more than the length that they were actually.
That's pretty probably right.
I'm sure about two takes.
I know we mentioned it, but the scene where the dad is like stripped down to shorts and is boxing in his MMA gym, and Ken comes to talk to him, and the dad kind of threatens and intimidates him. I was like, I don't understand what this is. I don't understand what's going on right now. The dad being an MMA championship fighter does not like have any bearing on the movie. Hotel owner. He doesn't have a championship fight that's important to the show, to the movie. He doesn't fight anybody. He's not called upon to have that expertise. He is a hotel owner first and foremost. So why is he an MMA fighter?
Because the other part of it is, and again, we could rewrite this movie very easily. He could say, like, I own a hotel full of performers. You know why they're working here? Because they can't get jobs in the real world. I don't want you to being with a performer. Like, I don't want you to live.
Yeah. How about this? He's like, I've got a big fight coming up. It's my last fight. I want you, my daughter, there.
Yes,
and
be
she's
there.
Like, I've got the dance competition that night. And he's like, no daughter of mine is going to dance.
Right.
You know, you're going to blah, blah, blah. You should. So, you know, I want to.
After all I've done for you, I've asked about your kitty. I bought you a nice white shirt.
Like, make it about, you know, her commitment to him or her commitment to dance.
Well,
you
let's
know,
talk about his relationship with his ex-wife, because all of a sudden they're back together at the end.
He says, get my ex-wife on the phone, and next thing you know, they're like making out in the crowd.
And she just wins the dance competition. Jen, she looks out and sees her mom. She's surprised her mom's in the audience. She's like, says to her mom, like, what? How did you get here? And the mom's like, he called me. And they start kissing.
And then they start kissing. And I was like, what on earth? Like, so just because she won the dance, what a terrible thing to say. What a terrible message that if you win the dance competition, your divorced parents will get back together.
Also, like, this man has not called her in 5 years. And then he calls the mom once. She comes down to Panama City and it all works out. Like,
they're a family again? Like, this sets unreal expectations for young people, young children of divorce watching. The way that the hair is hitting your head right now is so funny.
Oh my gosh, I'm looking at it.
It's so funny right
Cody
now.
Cody or Molly, can you please take a picture?
Somebody take a screen grab of this, please, so we can post it, because this is next level. Will you go up a little tiny bit to your left a little bit? Yes.
Great.
That is very satisfying. It really is like a game. What was the Andy Daly mustache? Oh, TV mustache?
That. TV mustache. Andy Daly created a game where you would get a little mustache with scotch tape in a bag, and you put it on the TV, and every time a person's face would line up with the mustache, you'd get a point. Brilliant game. Really smart game. But I was going to say the other thing
Can
about
Can I say
it,
something?
Yes, please.
I felt like Shotzi and Danny's dance was better than Jen and Ken's.
Oh, I didn't think that. I thought that Jen and Ken's, like, but
they were
again,
both good. They were both good.
I thought that, I think that what they were trying to prove was Jen and Ken's dance was effortless and without any pomp and circumstance.
Like, it was also very emotional. It was like an emotional, it was about their love.
Yes.
You know?
And where Shotzi and Danny's
Ken.
Dance.
Oh, or Danny rather.
Danny's
you're right.
dance
you're right. You're right.
was a little bit more performative. It felt like, I think it was to that core of what are we like? It's like they're very good dancers, but they're not like,
but they're
not
like connected.
Yes.
They're not connected by love. And what's interesting, just if you're thinking about watching this movie,
the
dance competition at the end of the movie, we don't just see our, you know, respective, the characters we've been following dance numbers. We see multiple other competitors' dance numbers in full.
Yes.
Like, we see
the reason why the
minutes-long dance numbers from people we've never seen before.
No, it's the reason why the movie is an hour and 30 minutes, because there is a good 10 minutes of padding in that final sequence. And then when they do their final dance, there's no, like, there's no like waiting with bated breath on who the winner is. There's no there's no drama. There's no stakes. It is just like, it just kind of like they finish their dance, like, and the winner is Jen and Ken. Like, wait, hold on.
And then credits.
Yeah.
And then credits.
It's like there is this is what I was gonna say. Like at that end, when he's saying thank you. Because I do believe that, like, Shotzi has some talent, right? She is good, and she, the reason why her and Danny bond is because they both agree that that winning is everything.
She's dancing with him in the contest.
That figures. Jeez. Well, now who the heck am I supposed to dance with?
You can't think of anybody else?
Hey, why don't we team up together and dance together in the contest?
I thought you'd never ask, but there's something you should know about me.
What's that?
Winning means everything to me. Everything.
Shotzi, you're my kind of girl.
And that's what bonds them. And I thought at the end when he goes, I just want to say thank you to this man and this woman. And I was like, oh, he's going to like thank Shotzi, because Shotzi like let him go to find his love. And she wasn't getting any of like her comeuppance, but no, he doesn't thank them. He doesn't like.
No, he thanks the Pops. He thanks Pops,
which I agree. Like, I understand why you want to, would want that.
Ken spends, I would say, 80% of the movie not wearing a shirt.
Or,
which is fascinating.
And ripping his shirt and getting that shirt wet. When he gets wet underneath the pool
shower. Yeah.
I felt in my gut that was so cold. And God bless him for not flinching.
When you just said it was winter, I was like, oh no, this must have been miserable.
Yeah, well, that's probably why they were able to get that hotel.
You're right.
You know, so they, but
yeah, they must have shot it all off season.
Oh my gosh. In what, maybe 4 or 5 days?
This must have been a quick, I mean, these can't have been long days.
Can I tell you how big the budget was? Like, you want to take a guess at the budget?
I'm going to guess the budget is $60,000.
$12 million.
$12 million?
$12 million dollars.
Dude, what are you talking about?
$12 million.
Oh, you're freaking me out right now.
I mean, like, I'm freaked out
about
that.
Where is that money?
I mean, because it's not in, they didn't hire a proper sound person, because the one scene where they let you actually hear the sound, it's like a very echoey. It's like when Shotsky confronts Pop.
Where is that money?
12 million, maybe on original songs and choreography. I don't know. I mean, look, Molly isn't sending me like the sanitation worker does get credited. The guy who was working, so people are getting credited, but. And the box office was $27,000, so it did not make back as money, but $12 million is...
I am genuinely curious where that money went.
$12 million is a lot. I mean, I'm thinking about
that. It's not on the screen. It's not on the screen. And it's not like they're paying, like, expensive... You know, actors who have
and they don't even have that one thing like that movie that we had with the cat, where you have like a one big actor and then everybody else is,
also a special effect kind of.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm sure that movie was not $12 million. I mean, this all felt like
that
favors.
Is interesting.
And it wasn't shot on state of the art cameras. That wasn't.
Oh, no. So it feels like it's shot on. It appears to be done in. Standard definition, half of it with like GoPros and like, you know, consumer,
I will say again,
cameras like the locker cam stuff like that, really shaky. Like, it's,
this is the year The Martian with Matt Damon came out and Bridge of Spies. Like, this is not this is not years and years and years ago. This is, you know, wild.
This feels more to this feels more in line with Miami Connection.
Yes.
Or a Governor Gabby or something. It feels like a movie made by someone who really wanted to make a movie. You know what I mean?
Yes. And I feel like I there's something about this movie, and I love that like energy and attitude for it, because I think there's something very pure about it. And, you know, Molly sent me a clip where he's talking about his reasoning for making this movie. Like, his reasoning is like he wanted to make a movie that was sweet. Like, he really wanted to show kids having a good time. And I feel like you get that vibe from him. But
well, that's
maybe
what I mean by like there's so little
the
conflict.
Yes.
There's so little conflict. There is no conflict. Nobody's really fighting about any of this stuff. Nobody, even like the the respective love triangles that exist, because Jen and Ken fall for each other, but Ken's dance partner, Shotzi, is in love with him, and Danny, the head bellboy, is interested in Jen. But both of them are like undeniably like at the end. They should win. Like, you should go to her.
Yes.
Shotzi is like, you should go to her. And Danny, when upon seeing them dance, is like, they should win. They both are so forgiving. There's no fighting. There's no like negative vibes.
I want to
really.
Read you some quotes from his website. All right. So this is David Winter's website. It goes, I had been.
It is feel good. You're right.
It had been over 40 years since West Side Story. And I was living in Thailand when I came up with this idea. And I came to America for 3 years, in which I lived in Florida. And my son, Alex Winters. I wonder if that's not.
Whoa. Wait a minute.
Is it the same?
Is it possibly Alex Winters?
Can you look that up, Molly? His son, Alex Winter, helped him find artists for the film's soundtrack, and together they spent hours a day searching and listening to music. His son also aided him with the writing of the screenplay, often corrected his jargon so it would better suit the youth of today.
That's really sweet.
He wrote 42 versions of the script in 1 year, so maybe he was paying himself every time he wrote a new version of the script. Maybe that's where the $12 million went. It's Alexander Winters, not Alex Winters. So technically, they're probably not the same one. And he goes, he wanted the film to reflect his inner vision, so he decided to finance it himself, allowing him total control over production.
Oh, wow.
He invited his old friend, Rob Lewin, to co-finance the project, and they just made what they wanted, and they said the inspiration was West Side Story and Romeo and Juliet, and a little bit of Alice in Wonderland, because everyone in the hotel is a dancer, and he originally wanted to call it the East Side Story.
Funny.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, these are some things. But again, if you want to make Romeo and Juliet, you are missing a pivotal component, which is star-crossed lovers. These are not star-crossed lovers. This is like purely a very simple misunderstanding. Like, in a weird way, like, you wouldn't want them to get together until the final dance number.
Get together too easily.
Yes.
And their impediments are pretty simply kind of done away with, you know, like the blockades to them are pretty easily, to them being together rather, are pretty easily kind of navigated. Like, the movie is very positive and very unchallenging to its heroes.
Yes, they get rid of the, yes. I mean, even and not even. I don't even think that the message of the movie is overtly like believe in your dreams. The message, like at the end, Pops says to the Ken, "You did it.
Yeah,
you sure did.
Yeah,
that's it. That's all.
And that's it.
That's all he got. That's all he's got from that. Like there's,
you know, and they won the contest."
Yeah.
Which the victory is just that, like a victory. They won the dance contest,
a local,
and that's
like,
enough.
Not to belittle it, but a real local ass contest, like not televised, not like there didn't even seem.
I don't know.
Big.
That crowd was pretty big.
Yeah, sure.
I was like, what crowd did they shoot? I'm so curious what this was.
A Two Live Crew reunion concert
genuinely
that happened.
I want to know. And that's what made me think, oh, I wonder if this dance contest is an actual dance contest that they're using as the framing device, you know, and we don't know about it, but it is like a famous dance contest there.
By the way, do you think that was that one dance contest where there's like 175 dancers in the street? Was that a dream sequence or did that really happen? When she falls asleep on the bench.
I don't. Oh, that's interesting.
Because,
was it a dream sequence?
Because 175 dancers come dancing down.
Oh, yeah.
A main street
and musicians.
And musicians.
It's like a whole. It seems like a parade happens.
And they pull her in to the dance, and then she does it with great success. But it's also weird, I guess, to have a dance sequence in a movie where everyone's dancing at all times.
Well, that's the thing about the movie is like there's like also having just watched West Side Story this past weekend.
Did you appreciate they put the warning about cigarette smoking before the movie started?
You know what? I honestly turned it off. I was like, you know what? I can't watch that.
Oh, don't give me this kind of.
I don't want to watch that.
But then why so much Shakespeare? Also, like, why confuse it?
Oh, we didn't mention the concierge, the front desk guy is constantly quoting Shakespeare.
Oh, Romeo. Oh, Romeo, where far out there, Romeo? Oh, here it is. Todd Romeo. He's in room 237. And then, like, reading a Shakespeare book, like, a giant, like, tome of Shakespeare, like, up in his hands. Yeah. My favorite moment is when Shakespeare falls on the captain, because the captain is not doing Shakespeare at all. But the captain goes, "Hey, can I tell you something?" And I think this is Shakespeare, but or maybe it's not. But the captain, and she goes, "Yeah, what's up?" And he goes, "It's always darkest before the dawn."
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, like he's also like in on like the only character that feels to be
everything
like,
feels stylized and the hotel, the interior of the hotel does feel like when you go inside, you enter like a magical land.
Right.
You know, it almost feels like inside the hotel, everybody dances and sings and does stuff and outside should be the real world. But it's not like everybody's dancing everywhere constantly without fail. Like, I was surprised again, like, they have them roller skating. Why not have them roller skating dance?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I wanted stuff like
that.
But
when you watch those people roller skate, they're not good. It is simply tourists.
It's concerning.
Yeah, I was like, oh, they look clunky on those skates. By the way, it was not Shakespeare, "It's Always Darkest Before the Dawn." That is an English theologian, Thomas Fuller, who is credited with that quote. But I do believe
which makes it really fun.
Oh man, oh man, this movie.
This was a blast.
This was a blast.
It is very disconcerting to watch a movie that is completely ADR'd.
Like, well, that's
the entirety of the film is, and for just to be very clear, the entirety of the film is filmed, but then all of the dialogue and all of the sound is put in afterwards. They did not capture the dialogue live.
And I will say, though,
on the day of shooting.
But here's the thing. It felt like they tried to, but they couldn't.
I'm sure they did, but because for whatever reason, it was unusable.
There's one scene where Shotsky chases Pops out and you hear like the real sound. And that's like almost at the very end of the film. And it's so jarring to finally hear like atmosphere, because that's the thing I think you're really missing out on. I think that's the thing that makes it so weird is like there's no like outside noise.
Yeah.
There's no street noise. There's no atmosphere.
It feels like a dubbed movie.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like if you were to have watched like a dubbed Kung Fu movie or something like that, it feels like that. You're right. It doesn't have, it's not built out. The sound is not built out. It's very sparse. And it just has the actors redoing their dialogue.
Imagine
and
how many days it took to do that. Like, cause it actually synced up.
My heart
fine.
Broke for those actors because I was like, you've given a performance and now you have to go back and try and redo all of your lines all and match all of it. And that's so difficult. They did it and they come off looking, I thought, really good. But it's like, it must have been a very difficult process to make this.
I mean, I will say again, and this is not going soft. This is not like, put this next to some of the acting in Step Up and you're matching it. Like, like everything kind of matches. So that it is an odd, like, it's not like, oh, well, this, you got to watch it for, it is just a uniquely bizarre movie that is like, I mean, the old man dancing by the pool.
Wild. Like, and I didn't even see the bleeding ear.
I mean, I got to go back and watch that just for this.
I got to watch the bleeding ear cut.
I can't believe that we've done this show for 11 years now or whatever we've done. And in the last like 2 months, the two movies here have blown me away by.
Yes. The fact that stuff like this is still being discovered and I had no idea it existed and that this one is just from a few years ago. All incredible reveals.
I mean, it is as shocking to me as seeing the father and daughter eat breakfast and her have one slice of watermelon on her plate. obviously, we have opinions about this movie. And, you know, look, our opinions are pretty high, but there are people out there with a different opinion. It's now time for Second Opinions.
The movie was a piece of shit. Recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? Maybe that art is subjective. I need a second opinion.
Thank you, Jean Lajoie. Let me tell you this, Jason. There's not many. Okay. Not many. These are 5-star reviews, cold from Amazon. I will say some of them are facetious. I'm going to try to
a wink inside of them.
Yeah. So I'm going to just kind of read you the ones that I feel like are real. These are from Nate Kiley, our amazing researcher who pulls together all this research. I'll also just credit Avril Halley. We just talked about finding these movies so late in the game. That's all Avril. Thank you, Avril, our movie picking producer. 82 reviews of this film. The average review, 75% are 5-star reviews. And this is like this is kind of what it is. Mrs. Smith writes, if you like movies with dancing in it, then this is a great movie to watch. If you're not a dance movie lover, then this is not for you. I personally like movies with great dancing. So I would recommend it.
Yeah.
5-star.
I mean, Mrs. Smith, not wrong. This movie is wall-to-wall dancing.
And many of the
to the detriment of plot, character development, etc. But I will say all of these people, and I didn't know they were like reality dance show winners, can dance. These are good dancers. Like, they're all good. Even like Danny the Bellboy turns out to be a good dancer. Shotzi's a good dancer.
Danny the Bellboy makes the biggest arc for me because there's something about him when you first meet him. He seems like a real like he's slimy. Like he's sticking his head in the door. She's like, okay, thank you, but get out of here. And then he seems like a real dick. Like he's trying to make a move on her. She's clearly not like she's so not interested in him that she's like, I don't
and
like
she's
you.
She's very upfront about
yes,
it.
Not trying to be weird about it at all. He doesn't take a hint. But then in the end, you found like he found the right person and it all worked out. The Mercutio. Is he Mercutio? I don't know. All right. So this is from Party Hardy. Party Hardy writes, dance fans will freak at the great moves and production numbers in this film. And I mean that as a good thing. Lots of happy, young, hot dancers competing for a grand prize is a setting for a romantic story of unlikely lovers. Nobody is going to win an acting Oscar here, but that's the same for Step Up and High School Musical. This is fun escapism. Put a smile on your face. Entertainment. Dance fans will freak at the moves. 5-star. And that's from Party Hardy. Now, I will read
you. But that's like a theme.
Yes.
Basically, everybody's saying, if you like dancing, watch this movie.
I mean, like I said, I would argue if you like dancing and montages and Florida.
Holy shit.
This is
your favorite movie ever.
I mean, this
movie should be called Florida Dance Montage.
And I will say this, better than Justin to Kelly. Like, without a doubt.
Yeah.
100%. Justin Kelly may have better production value. This is better. This is a better movie. I think the actors are better. I think the dance numbers are better. The songs, which are not sung forward, they're in the background, better. I will read
And there's also weirdness. Like, this movie has weirdness in its favor. Like, the circus performers, the Panama City is a character in the movie. Like, yes. That weirdness is missing from Justin to Kelly.
One-star review of this movie. This is from Antalia. Antalia writes this, and I think it's one of the best one-star reviews I've ever read. This movie was shot at my high school, and I'm not spending the money to watch it. One star. Just that.
That's amazing.
Now, you think that did they fly the crew out from Beverly Hills to Panama City?
I'm so curious.
This movie, what a treat.
A delight. This is some wild stuff. This was a blast.
All right, so we recommend you watching this movie. There's no doubt about it. I will say that one of the best parts of watching movies on Amazon is the trivia section. If you pause the movie, you can see the trivia, like when you're on an iPad, oftentimes. What has gone on in that trivia section is so Florida specific that it makes me laugh. Like, I'll just read you a couple of these things because these really killed me. It was like this. It was Panama City and the beaches is 18 miles outside of the town. Golf carts can't legally travel on state highways. Jenny would not have been able to get to the airport to her father's hotel in a golf cart in any circumstance, much less in a song chorus. Then they go, Jenny supposedly goes to her father's hotel room. It's a house in the Finisterre subdivision. That's 10 minutes away from the hotel.
Oh, my God.
Okay. And then they go, locals will notice that during several montages, the characters make impossible jumps between locations. For example, Tony's dance studio was located in Callaway in the far east side of Panama City, but somehow Ken dances from there to the hotel in 16 miles away and then back 8 miles to St. Andrew's Marina in the space of a single verse. Jenny would not have been able to walk 13 miles from Beach Drive downtown to Pier Park at the random dance party. And then it's all...
It's like literal, like travel specific.
Yes. It's so great.
I love that. It goes, that's really funny.
One can see the logo for the Phoenix Performance Fitness Center on the wall behind the father. This is a great gym 9 miles away from the hotel.
And then
the final one, which is like another, this is all under trivia, right? It goes, the hotel clerk asks, wherefore out there, Romeo, while looking for the paperwork on a guest named Romeo. However, the phrase does not mean, where are you, Romeo? It means, why are you, Romeo? In the context of Romeo and Juliet, Juliet is wondering aloud why Romeo is who he is because she's forbidden to socialize with his family. She's bemoaning her bad luck. The phrase has nothing to do with location, so it does not make sense with the clerk to say it while looking for Romeo's paperwork. Like, I mean, this is like,
I've never looked at this section and now I'm always going to. That's amazing.
It is one of my favorite sections because anyone can add trivia to anything. So we're getting into like amazing. The fact that you are breaking down the geography of Panama City as trivia.
As like, yeah, to be like, no, this is 9 miles. Somebody's did like the mileage. Somebody like with all of the locations. I love it.
It's so great. All right. Well, Jason, we've talked a lot about dance throughout today's episode. And I think we got to leave with maybe the immortal words of Pops and how he views his dance.
Yes.
You can play baseball. You can play tennis. You can even play football, but you can't play dance.
What a pleasure. June will be missed, but we will see you next time for our in-between episode. Give us a call at 619-PAUL-ASK. Jason and I will catch up on what we're watching. We'll talk more about what you thought about dancing. It's on, and I'm sure a movie like this will have a lot of people calling in with factoids that we don't even know. But there's so much. I want to find out where that $12 million went.
Seriously.
We need to find out more about this movie, so we're sending out our How Did This Get Made detectives, which have been doing some great work in the last couple of weeks with their call-ins and their messages on the Discord at discord.gg/hdtgm. All right, we will see you next time. A big thank you to our producers who are amazing. We're talking about Cody Fisher. We're talking about Molly Reynolds. We're talking about Avril Halley. We're talking about our engineer, Devin Bryant. We are talking about our publisher, July Diaz. Of course, our researcher, Nate Kylie, and our amazing artwork, which is created every week by the ghost of Craig T. Nelson on Instagram, and Kyle Waldron. Make sure you visit us in all the places that are social, and we will see you next week for an in-between episode. Bye for now.